Welcome to Booked, the sort of mobile library you wish you'd had down your street. Party poppers with the adult fiction and maybe a glass of refreshing lager with the Barbara Cartlands. Some people say this programme's a hotchpourri, but I prefer to call it a popotch. And our panellists today, the regulars, Miles Kington, one of the few people in the world, apart from Mike Tyson, whose CV includes the word punch, and Dilly Keane, one of the few people, apart from Pavarotti, whose CV includes the word Aida. Fascinating, that. And competing for the Booker Prize, that's 15 rounds in the Groucho Club with heavyweight Melvin Bragg, Roger McGough, one of the few people in the world, apart from Teresa Gorman, whose CV includes the word scaffold, and Mark Thomas, the only person, apart from TV presenter Andy Peters, whose CV includes the word iconoclast. So, that's the challenge. Here's the Annika. Each panellist will find a pack of cards in front of them. Each card has written upon it the name of a literary villain. All you have to do is describe the villain without using real names so the others guess it. You can only pass on one, and you've only got a minute, so it's urgent. Roger and Mark, start now.
Right, a stepdaughter was given an apple to her and she
poisoned. The Wicked Queen.
The Snow White stepmother.
Yes, that's the one I meant, mm-hmm. The bloke on a pirate ship, missing a hand.
Captain Hook.
Yeah, lovely.
This is Oliver Twist, Fagin's friend.
Bill Sykes.
This one here was played by Marlon Brando, and he's Italian, but he has lived in America. You lose a son, I lose a son.
The Godfather.
Yeah, that's right.
Godfather, yeah, very good. This was another famous pirate. Had lots of wives in some case, you think.
15 seconds.
Hirsute pirate.
Hairy pirate. Yes. Hairy Jim. Big Bluebeard.
Yes, yeah.
Right. Oh, 10 seconds.
Cinderella had two of them. They're really
disgusting. Ugly sisters.
Yeah. You've got five right.
Yes!
Amazingly. Miles and Dilly, off you urgently go now.
Play, Shakespearean play, King with Three Daughters.
King Lear?
Yeah, but the villain.
The villain? Edgar.
Ed something.
Edward. Edwin. Edmund.
Right.
He was ever so humble and he was a dickhead.
Uriah Heep.
Yep.
Heights, they were Wuthering, and this man.
Yes.
30 seconds.
Heathcliff.
Yes, very good, very good.
It was in an infernal darkness and he was looking for a ring and he hissed a lot. And
it was either Wagner or Tolkien.
It rhymes with Bollum.
It's no good. I've never read the book.
5 seconds.
The science fiction film. This Alec Guinness was the other one.
And Darth Vader. Oh, and up the beanstalk. And
Giant.
Yes.
Time's up. There. Time's up. Miles and Dilly, you got four. Next round. Yes, our old friend, Beginnings and Endings. Come in, Beginnings and Endings. Wash your hands, please. This is a literary game. Our famous four had to come up with appropriate beginnings and endings which parody a writer or a book. Roger, we gave you A Clockwork Orange in lieu of a fee by Anthony Burgess, a bleak and violent novel written in an invented language, a bit like the final draft of BR's Winter Timetable. Roger.
This is the beginning of Clockwork Orange. What's it going to be then, eh? There was me, that's Alex, and my three droogs in the Krover Milk Bar, making up our razoo docks, whether to either Pete the Old Moloko with Synthamesque, for a nice quiet horror show with lights bursting all over your mozg, and then Tolt chuck some old Vec in the alley and vid him swim in his blood before smacking off at his takings, or whether to ... onto the end of the Clockwork Orange. Looking back now over the years, oh my brother, I think we made the right decision that evening. Signing on for elocution classes at our local community centre saved our bacon. Miss Gillian Shepherd was an inspired teacher who soon encouraged us to drop our self-regarding street patois and express ourselves clearly and precisely. The happy result is that we all bettered ourselves. Pete and Georgie became news presenters on TV. Dim went into politics and I became a clockwork satsuma.
Miles, we gave you The Jungle Book, the story of Mowgli, Baloo, Bagheera, and other anagrams of Balkan place names. So what are your new beginnings and endings, Miles?
All right, this is how it now starts. It was dawn on the edge of the jungle when Father Wolf woke from a brief sleep and stared out into the tropical morning. A noise had woken him, a strange new noise, or a roaring, grinding noise, as if some animal were eating the very trees and rocks of the jungle. What is that? Said Mother Wolf fearfully. I don't know, said Father Wolf. The nearest thing I ever heard to that was Shere Khan with a stomachache. There it is, said Mother Wolf. A strange animal. It's huge. It's yellow. I've never seen it before. What? It was, in fact, a bulldozer. And it was eating up all the trees and the rocks as it went. And as they watched, a man with a yellow helmet put up a sign saying, to preserve the environment and to aid the rainforests of the world, this part of the jungle is being selectively felled by the Happy Hamburger restaurant chain. A branch opening soon in your area. New ending. All was quiet in the jungle. The dusk fell. The birds went home. Father Wolf lay licking his paws. Well, they've lost this time, said Mother Wolf, but I'm sure they'll be back again. Mmm, said Father Wolf, digging something out of his teeth. I hope so. They were very tasty. I liked the quantity surveyor best, said Shere Khan, passing by. I liked the overseer best, said the wolf, more fat, more chewy. Which one was that? The one who strode around in the flapping raincoat, shouting orders. Oh, yes, said Mother Wolf, Big Mac. He was nice. The animals fell silent, thinking of the feast they'd had from the humans working for the Happy Hamburger chain. In the silence of the jungle, all you could hear was the flapping of the discarded clothing of the hamburger employees, the yellow capes, the ripped-up helmets, the recently occupied trousers. But, as Mother Wolf said, that was the trouble with takeaway food, all the litter that got left behind.
Mark, your book was The Fall of the House of Usher, by the well-known American vaudeville trio Edgar Allan Poe. A jolly gothic romance about, good gag that, innit, about mental instability and death.
It's the first line. I rode over the desolate moor, heading to the house of Usher. Bone white, dry, withered tree stumps pricked the barren scrub like skeleton's fingers. Dank and fetid hung the air. Hung the air around that house, lifeless and vapid. The very spirit of decay. Then I noticed a crack in the brickwork of the house, a zigzag fissure that seemed to run up the entire house of Usher. I heard a voice. Who repaired that, did I? Cowboys, was it? Ah, this is going to cost you to sort this one out. We're going to have to strip it right back. We are here. Oh, now, what you want to do, you want to keep the family tomb because that's your original features, isn't it? I know what you're asking, Mr. Usher. How much for cash? This is the last line. There was an almighty rush like the sound of a thousand winds and the ground seemed to devour the very building itself, snapping at the last fragments of the house of Usher. That is your dry rot, is that? Now, if you'd have seen me when all this had started, we wouldn't have been in this situation, would we? I've taken down the plasterboard and bingo, look who's behind it. It's your sister, Mr. Rusher, look at that.
And Dilly, you've got The Unbearable Lightness of Being by Milan Kundera, a novel about obsessive sex and bowler hats, which was going to be called Friday Afternoon at the Foreign Office. Dilly, tell us what you've done.
Well, it starts like this. It is especially mysterious to eternally return. The nocturnal journey to the inferno of the paternal taverna in Smyrna. The earnest concern discerned through the stern colonel's epergne. The churning internal yearning, burning a hernia in the sternum. Yet all this, what does it signify if one cannot return, if this is it, mate? Only one crack at the whip. What do you think this is, a bloody dress rehearsal? Today is the first day of the rest of your life, here today, gone tomorrow. Of course, truth, is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friend, then let's keep dancing. Let's bring out the booze and have a ball, if that's all there is. And it closes a little while later. At last, passing through Shepherd's Bush and Acton, Tomash returned to West London. The station looked familiar, as in a half-remembered dream. Through the ticket gate, he saw the commons stretching out before him. Home, after so many years of exile. Home at last, belonging, knowing, being. The conductor stretched his hand out for Tomash's ticket, courteous and respectful, tipping his hat in a mannerly fashion. Could I trouble you for your ticket, sir? Suddenly, Tomash recalled with sadness the unbearable politeness of Ealing. The sound of a tube train rumbled weakly from below.
Now, what are these? Yep, they're sound effects. We're going to play some sounds. You've got to guess their effect. And the book title, The Makeup. Roger and Mark, listen to this. 34 seconds of the whole story.
you, Father. You're wonderful.
Thank you, Father. You're marvellous.
Thank you, Father.
I'm going for King Lear on this one. Is it well, King Lear?
It is.
The Three Daughters, yes.
Well done.
There you go, Matt.
How about this one? And listen carefully to the words of the songs. Sea Houses Fisherman's Choir.
I thought I recognised the tone.
What about those noises at the beginning before the singing started?
Braying.
Foghorn.
Foghorn it was.
To the light.
Lighthouse.
To the lighthouse. How about this one? Roger and Mark. Just the title, this one.
A lovely whore. Train?
It's not exactly a train.
I thought it was a tram myself. No. Was it a trolley?
Tram, trolley.
It was a tram trolley.
Oh, Streetcar Named Desire.
Yes.
Yes.
Miles and Dillion.
It's all about water and song, or song and water. And
water and Four Seasons.
Seasons was important.
Seasons.
This is weird little thing about this, because there's a lot of rowing going on, so there's one person moves, there's someone from moving from one place to another, and it seemed to me that the music seemed to be French and English, so one person moving from France to England. There's a bit of a thunk at the end, which symbolises the guillotine. We're going for Tale of Two Cities.
Very nearly.
Bum.
Greensleeves was not a clue, then?
Henry VIII wrote Greensleeves, supposedly.
Yeah.
Ah, six words. No, carry on up. No,
Man for All Seasons.
Ah,
a man for all seasons.
And now we open the door on our literary cocktail party. Cosy banter between fictional characters. Look, there's Shane sharing olives and vol-au-vents with Sir Andrew Aguecheek, and here's Roger helping the guests to mingle. Who have you got, Roger?
I was given the dong with the luminous nose meets Cyrano Bergerac. So I've put them on a beautiful, far-off island, and Mark's going to be the dong.
Yes, that's right.
Far and few are the land where the jumblies live. Their heads are green and their hands are blue, and they went to sea in a sieve.
Excusez-moi, monsieur. Could I have a light, s'il vous plaît?
Help yourself.
Merci. That is a very fine light you have on the end of your nose.
Oh, thank you. And that's a very fine nose you have on the end of your nose.
Thank you. Cyrano de Bergerac at your service, monsieur. And you are?
Dong.
Dong? Dong? You mean like horse manure?
No. Dong as in ding-dong.
Ding-dong, ah, bien. Well, perhaps you can help me, monsieur. Have you seen by any chance a beautiful lady by the name of Roxanne?
Does she have sky blue hands and sea green hair?
No.
Oh, I haven't seen her then. I don't suppose you've come across a jumbly girl, have you?
Jumbly girl? You mean wearing second-hand clothes?
No. You see, the last time I saw her, she went off the sea in a sieve.
A sieve? You mean like a chamber pot with holes in?
Yes, that's right.
And then she wanted to go and farm, monsieur.
Why not?
Because the seas around this island are patrolled by the French Navy. By now, she'll be under arrest.
Under arrest? But what for?
In the interest of national security. For the same reason that I now arrest you, for trespassing. In 3 days' time, the French government will explode another nuclear device beneath this island. Now put out that light, you pitiful creature, and come with me. You Greenpeace people never give up, do you?
Miles, who's your combo?
Well, I was asked to imagine a meeting between Obelix, the big French heavyweight, and Goliath, the even bigger Philistine champion.
Hey.
Who?
You, sitting on my towel.
Me?
Yes, you, big boy.
Who are you calling big boy?
You.
Me?
Yes, you great fat lumber lord.
Me? Lord?
Yes, you, blimey. I thought I was stupid till I met you.
Stupid? Are you calling the champion of the Philistines stupid, you pear-shaped nincompoop, you waddling barbarian?
I beg your pardon, but are you calling the fearless Frenchman the champion of the tribe, the undefeated warrior of the North French coast, the
what?
I can't remember. When I get into a long sentence, I can never remember how it started, and I can never get out of it.
Are you looking for a fight?
Yes, I am looking for a fight.
Well, you've come to the right place. I'm going to smash you into little pieces.
I think not, Mr. Tall as a Tree and twice as stupid. Where I come from, I'm reckoned invisible.
I am undefeated back home.
Then you should have stayed home, shouldn't you?
Oh, looking for a fight, are we?
I thought we'd established that already.
Had we? I don't remember. I've got lots of muscles, but very short memory span. So what are we going to fight about?
I don't know.
I know. Let's fight about gods.
About gods what? By the way, I like the armour on your legs. That's new, isn't it?
Yes, they're called brass greaves. Very big in the Philistine disco scene.
Nice.
I really like that big thing you've got in your hand behind your back there.
Oh, my menhir.
You too, eh? You've just come for the menhir, have you?
Speak for yourself, ducky.
Always do, honey. Care for a drink?
I'd love one. But what about the fight?
Oh, forget about the fight. Let's just kiss and make up.
And Mark, who met where and what happened?
This is Holden Caulfield from Catcher in the Rye, world's biggest liar, and meets John Boy Walton, who you probably all know. And in this, Roger is John Boy Walton, and I'll be Holden Caulfield. And the rest of the team make a walk-on appearances. And they meet in jail. I'm Holden Caulfield, New York State. I'm in for absconding, underage drinking, drug possession, and generally being a smart-ass in a build-up area. You?
John Boy Walton. I'm from Walton Mountain. I shouldn't be here at all. You see, Grandpa Walton needed money to pay for an operation to stop him going blind. So my youngest sister sold her kidneys to pay for the operation. Papa went looking for her kidneys to get them back, but the crops failed while he was away, and the rest of the family were sold as slaves, except Grandma, who spontaneously combusted. I've been out looking for my family. I walked into a bar, and, well, some loud mouth was talking ill at country folk, and I guess I must have started a fight. The next thing, I wakes up here.
Well, John Boy, the plus side is you ended up with me. You're a country boy, right?
I'm country boy, yes, I am. Do I detect a note of contempt? Because you might be a city slicker, but I'm honest, hard-working, and I ain't afraid to fight if I have to.
Now, listen. I have nothing against country folk. I know some city slicker people have a problem with country folk. You know, cracking bad jokes and all, you know, what lives in the deep south and has an IQ of 2. Twins, that kind of thing, you know. What's the definition of confusion in the country? Thinking of what to buy your brother for Father's Day. That kind of joke, you know. But not me, no. No. I have got no problem with country folk. You stick with me, and you're just going to be fine, okay?
Yeah, but...
But no buts, no buts. I am seriously connected. My stepfather knows the president. The big cheese in my family, though the real big cheese, is my real father. Yeah, I'm...
I'm actually the Pope's illegitimate love child. That's right. I got connections now, right? So you ignore the country bumpkins in this cell and you just stick with me.
Lights out.
Well, good night, John Boy.
Good night, Holden.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Mama.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Papa.
Good night, John Boy.
Good night, Jimbo.
Say, your new city friend gonna say goodnight too?
Did I ever tell you that Colonel Sanders and I were related?
And finally, Dilly, who's caught in your net?
Well, we had Lady Bracknell meeting Sally Bowles at the Harvey Nichols sale. Oh, my gosh, but it's crowded in here. Sorry, excuse me, sorry.
Kindly refrain from poking your umbrella into my posterior, young ladies. Most discommoding.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to get over to that counter over there. I've struggled in the sales just to get myself a handbag.
A handbag?
Not just any old handbag. It has to be a Prada handbag. If you could see it through my eyes, you wouldn't wonder at all. If you could see it through my eyes, I guarantee you would fall like I did. And this morning I thought to myself, maybe this time, but now I accept. And the price tag, I see that it's way out of my league.
Hank Stalbury, you actually mean you can't afford it?
On the button, lady. Tomorrow belongs to me, but nothing else. Money, 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 money. When you haven't any coal in your stove and you freeze in the winter and you look £30 in a week.
Yes, 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 indeed. Money makes the world go round. Mark, yen, or a buck, or a pound. It's a sentiment that I've often expressed to Lord Bracknell on the few occasions when he can be persuaded to stay awake.
Oh, my gosh, are you a real live aristocrat? I love it.
Lord Bracknell was extremely fortunate in obtaining my hand in marriage. He got the rest of my body a year later. The Bracknells have only married those whose blood is the bluest of hue. Do you have fortunate connections?
I used to have this girlfriend known as Elsie, with whom I shared four sordid rooms in Chelsea.
So, have you got over your disappointment at not securing for yourself a brand new handbag at a knockdown price?
Oh, yeah. Who needs a handbag? Stuff handbags.
Quite. Bugger handbags.
I do.
So do I. Well, that's all right, then.
Right, now it's our turn to do the work. Listen to these people describing books and tell us which book they're describing. Now watch out, because some of these people don't know the book as well as the author. Miles and Dilly first.
Well, I think this book has perhaps one of the most memorable opening lines of any book.
I think Graham Greene has described one of the best novels in the English language.
This is a book that I've managed to avoid reading. I've read extracts from it, which have put me off.
I was made to read this at school, and it had the effect on the class that all the boys wanted to go out and kill things, and all the girls decided they were really into animal rights.
But there's, of course, religious significance in it.
The whole thing was a sort of miss for America.
It's a book that crops up in a lot of other books.
Water, water everywhere.
The main character really goes further than just his job or his calling, and it becomes an obsession.
The book is OTT.
He shall beckon and all shall follow.
Big.
There's one or two massive red herrings in there.
An opening line was one of the most famous.
That's a big myth for America.
Big myth.
Mm. Audience, any ideas?
Big myth for America? They won the Vietnam War.
Walt Disney.
Huckleberry Finn. No. Oh. No. It's
Henry James.
Moby Dick.
Call me a
Sick.
Call
water, me. Water everywhere.
Gosh.
Yeah. Obsession.
Yeah.
Mark and Roger, try this one.
The cockerel, the scrabbling for food, the old-fashioned canoe that wasn't watertight.
I remember they were travelling across Europe and there were scenes of sort of devastation everywhere and bombed-out cities.
It definitely made clear that there's nothing glamorous about war, although it was set in war.
It was on television and it was on every sort of like a serial every week.
It's actually famous for being one of the first explicit children's books with, you know, in social realism.
Ah, yeah, this is it's a silver something or other. It's a book about Poland, isn't it? It's a brilliant book.
The audience. The Silver Sword. Lady on the first row. Mars and Dilly, try this one.
I remember the film as being quite kitsch.
Watered down cabbage soup, gold bars, old people huddled together. Walking sticks.
I think the funniest thing is the way that the other people who go with him, they're sort of eliminated one by one.
Dreams. Yeah. Gutters. 10-year-olds.
I used to live near one that was kind of dominated the whole of this sort of suburban landscape because you could smell it.
Brewery smell?
Gasworks?
Tannery smell?
Is there a chocolate factory?
There is.
Is it Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory? Charlie and the chocolate factory.
Mark and Roger, try this.
Romance, love, lust, anger, deceit, death. Had it all, really, didn't it?
Normal family life, isn't it? Getting on well with your relations.
E-by gum.
Makes me think of cold stone flag floors.
It was freezing and everyone had colds.
Heroes and heroines.
Yeah, atmospheric.
And Monty Python did a semaphore version of it.
I couldn't understand the servant. I had to speak it out loud to see if I could understand what he was saying.
Right.
Well, we've got things like... Was it Shakespearean?
No.
Not.
The Monty Python bit's a bit of a big clue, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Somebody said, E-by-gum.
E-by-gum. So it's going to be up north, then.
We could help you.
Oh, go on, then.
Go on, then.
Well, we think it's... Wuthering Heights.
It is.
E-by-gum.
And now... It's time for Lonely Hearts. Last week, we asked our panellists to read out their Lonely Hearts. Sad, really, but this is a big chance for them. With a national audience and being radio, nobody can see their faces. Anyway, the mailbag wasn't exactly bulging, but I'm happy to tell you that Mark is a transformed man and now happily baking cakes with the rector's wife, whilst Dilly has made a good match for Adam after the fall. Sadly, Roger and Miles didn't get any replies at all. So Roger and Miles, this is your big chance. And will you switch that music off?
This is one for Dopey. Non-talking bald dwarf with low IQ seeks good-looking, progressive, independent female for genuine relationship, fun, romance, leading to cleaning and cooking for seven. P.S. I am part owner of a diamond mine.
I just suggest another dwarf, and this is Grumpy. Female required for Grumpy Pumpy.
Tintin, a 55-year-old Belgian journalist with the face of a boy of 16, wishes to meet 55-year-old woman with the body of a girl of 16. Object to get out of a career in journalism without ever having apparently written a story.
I've got bottom. My chums tell me I'm an ass to advertise, but hell, there must be a fairy out there for this lonely but fun-loving weaver. Very good sense of humour, into Andram and dreams.
Any more?
I've just got one more here, which is one for Miss Marple. A good time gal that's so hot you're going to need an alibi to pass it up. Looking for a real man that I won't have to get my magnifying glass out to. Photo schmoto, let's tango, rough stuff.
Well, it's time to finish now, but there's still time for my favourite item in the programme. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do by Ian McMillan. Ending a Radio 4 programme with a poem is quite a revolutionary thing to do, but not as revolutionary as going, woo! So, it just remains for me to thank Mark Thomas, Roger McGough, Miles Kington and Dilly Keane. Booked was researched by Felicity Goodall, devised and produced in Bristol by Mark Yobbs, and presented by me, Ian McMillan, the man from Porlock's Fat Mate. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.